Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Matters, your go-to source for the latest industry news and insights. We bring you up-to-date information on the real estate market and discuss the latest trends, technologies, and strategies to help you make informed decisions. And now, we invite you to join us as we explore the exciting world of commercial real estate.
Hello, friends. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Commercial Real Estate Matters. I'm your host, Tommy Dalton, and today I'm joined by a special guest, Lisa Esterich from Ratio Design. Welcome, Lisa.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, you and I met about a year ago at a networking event, and I realized I had some sort of idea about landscape architecture. Started asking you lots of questions and realized I didn't know what to expect or what I was talking about.
It never happens.
I appreciate you bearing with me last year, and I got to learn a lot more and started paying more attention to what people do for developments and that kind of thing. If it's okay with you today, I'd kind of like to educate listeners about what landscape architect is, how important it is with new building projects, I guess, and how designs affect the appearance of the project, the moods, what the intended reaction is supposed to be like, the art of it, the science of it. I've kind of did a little bit of homework, but I still need to get some more education on it. Let me start first by just kind of introducing who you are, giving your bio here, and we'll kind of get after that.
Yeah, sounds good. So, and I just want to say, just thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on, because I do think that there is a lot of misunderstanding around landscape architecture. So I appreciate any form that we're able to bring better understanding to it.
That's great. Yeah, I completely was not aware of all the things it involved, and I just thought you guys were helpful about picking out trees and plants for projects, right. But it's a lot more than that. So Lisa is a principal and landscape architect leader at the Raleigh Ratio Studio. Ratio has 4 studios across the Midwest, 1 in Denver and 1 in Raleigh. And prior to that, you worked at Carol Johnson Associates in Rhode Island, I think, right? And then
in Boston.
In Boston, yeah. That's right. Yeah. And served at the same time as an adjunct professor to the University of Rhode Island.
And My alma mater.
Your alma mater, yeah. And actually have driven by there, believe it or not. Anyway, she volunteers with the Town of Apex on the Parks and Recreation and Culture Advisory Committee and with the community gardens at the Moore Square Museum Magnet Middle School in downtown Raleigh. I appreciate you again being on. And let's just jump right in, if you don't mind. We just talked about it a little bit earlier. You just like, what's a common myth or misunderstanding about your role in landscape architecture?
Well, I think a lot of people make the same assumption that you kind of alluded to. It's they just equate you with a landscaper or a gardener. And I get the question of, oh, well, it's wintertime. It must be your downtime. You must not have too much work going on. And I think the misconception is that I'm not out digging plants in the ground. We are designers. We are kind of part of that community. But I think there's maybe lack of understanding in what landscape architecture means to the built environment and this bridge to the natural environment. Because what we do is we design all of the interstitial spaces between buildings. And it could be just as global as that. Essentially, we just want to create healthy, safe communities that not just provide an environment to be in, but they provide an experience for people. Because we need to connect people to, and we are different from architecture. Architecture is about the built environment. And when you think of architecture, it's about following laws of order and function and form and structure. And then there are also this kind of overlay of different aesthetics or different philosophies that you can kind of take it in those directions. Landscape architecture is the same. It's just we're dealing with a different kind of palette of materials. And there's a different kind of timelessness to our work because it's ever changing. Mm-hmm. We're building, the best time to photograph a building is the day that it's built. And then it's not going to change that much. It's static. The landscape and the design that we work on, it's dynamic. And so we can figure out what all of those principles are. We have the same laws of order and function and form that we want to do. And there are different aesthetics that we can kind of create like within a project. But what it looks like day one is totally different than what it's going to look like 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So it's being able to create a design that kind of has that 30-year, 50-year, 100-year vision to it. And it's not just about this kind of static object of a building. It is creating these complex systems because some of our materials are living things themselves and they're going into living things. So how do you create those conditions in just in the ecology of the space, provide a design that's meeting the needs of the client, the actual site itself, the people who are going to use it? And then how does that stand the test of time?
That's very interesting. I think the approach that, I mean, that's much more than I even thought of. You and I talked a little bit about COVID as well. Has that changed the design of what we think about getting more outside and more amenities? People are trying to work towards bringing folks back into the offices. They're trying to work bringing them into better shopping spaces. We're creating all these layouts. Has COVID actually, or the pandemic rather, has it changed what you guys think about in design?
I think it maybe put us more in touch with this just basic need to interact with nature, have those little breaths of air and see sunlight and see green and trees, but also to connect with people. And COVID kind of put a punctuation on how much all of that contributes to our own mental well-being. So I think that COVID kind of helped people see the value of outdoor spaces a little bit more than they may have really recognized before. Yeah. So I think there may have been a turn in kind of maybe how intentional we are to provide those spaces that give that connection. But I think it may go beyond just a response to COVID too. What I'm seeing, and I can't quote this because I've heard it in a couple different formats, and I certainly agree with it, but I think it's also becoming almost a generational thing too that is impacting design, because I'm Gen X. You think baby boomers and Gen X, we were much more consumers of goods. Right. And now with Gen Z, millennials, they're more the consumers of experiences. And that is driving design. It's driving development, because I think regardless of market type or place, if you're a higher ed institution or you're a commercial development or you're a municipality, you're looking to get people in to drive up sales. You're looking to increase your enrollment. You're looking to add to your tax base. And there's competition in being able to attract people. Think about workplaces, like attracting your next level of talent. People are looking for what experiences are you providing? And those are the places they want to go to. And I think, especially locally, I think we are at an advantage because we kind of see that more. We see the Fentons and the North Hills and these little districts that are being created, and they're about the experience. They're about creating this wonderful place that is comfortable to get to and park, and you want to walk around because there's art and there's places to sit and you can meet people or talk to people and create a sense of community. There's plantings and you feel safe and secured, and it's environmentally, there's shade in the summertime and warmth in the winter, and there's sound and all these things that just activate all the senses and connect us to people and connect us to a place. And that's what people want in any format, whether it's a retail development, mixed use development, or it's a campus or even a school, high school.
That's pretty interesting. I think I agree with you on you start noticing a lot more, especially in our commercial real estate world, where they're starting to develop these things. And that's where you figure the landscaper is the one responsible for all these. So you don't realize that you have a architect like yourself in the background working on these projects. So tell me about who are some of the clients or customers that choose Ratio, or how does that work into the overall development? We're putting up a building, we've got some dirt, and when does that process start, and how does someone find you guys for that?
Well, I think just to speak to Ratio, we've talked about just some of the differences between the built environment versus the natural environment and being that bridge, but those two things need to happen together. The architects working with the landscape architects, working with the interior designers, wanting to be this collaborative, interdisciplinary design team. And Ratio, we're founded on, we're wanting to foster that kind of community. So we do have all of those disciplines, and we are always wanting to work together to kind of create that shared vision, because we know that the building can't come without understanding the site, and vice versa. It needs to all come together so that we're not just answering the question of what the best solution is. Like, we're achieving a better place of higher design excellence. And that's when we are able to really enhance communities, have an impact on spaces. Clients, they find us from different streams. I think we're diversified enough that we don't have just kind of one specialty. So we work across a lot of different market types. And because in the 40 years that we've been in practice, we have had a lot of experience. We have a lot of people that have a lot of knowledge in a lot of different ways. We are known for that in different realms. So they may come to us because of those specific expertise in something like hospitality or in libraries or in parks and recreation. Or they may just know us just geographically, see that we're working on something and either like what they see or know our reputation, and will reach out to us from that. Or we also partner with a lot of kind of national design firms. So we may have a partnership where it may be a really high profile project, or it may be in a different location where we're sought out to be kind of a local partner, or we're set out to be the design expert someplace else. There's a lot of different ways that we interact with clients and different kind of market types.
That's great. I think I'm going to throw you a curveball here. You talked about being a design expert. What's one thing about landscape architecture that almost no one agrees with you about when you're consulting with these clients?
So. Oh, agrees with me. I don't know if it's really disagreement versus maybe not having a full understanding of maybe what, in my view, what the priorities may want to be for a certain project, either because they're just not in the world that I'm in. One thing is soil. A lot of people wouldn't put the same importance on soil design and kind of creating conditions and understanding putting money into something that you may never see kind of below the ground. But that is the most important aspect of creating a planting community that is going to stand the test of time, that we're setting up to thrive. Especially in more challenged situations like urban settings and streetscapes. Right. And we need to go to a higher level of design in intentionally setting up those areas so we can be successful, because we want our plantings to thrive and to function in the way they are meant to function.
And not with our North Carolina clay soil.
Oh, right? Yeah. We have an adversarial relationship with our clay soils.
So let me piggyback off that a little bit. What's your biggest pet peeve that you see in other development projects when you look from a landscape architecture's kind of point of view and you see something, or you see something coming out of the ground that's being developed now? Do you have a special thing that you wish they wouldn't do, or would do different?
I don't know if I see something I could specifically pick out, but I usually can tell when the landscape design has been the one that's been sacrificed for value management or some such, where it looks like the value placed on maybe kind of getting to a different level of finish on the building or something interior to a development, but that meant the removal of plantings or benches or things that, so it seems like if there's a budget issue, then first thing that is going to be slashed are some of those things. And those are some of the things that I think really contribute to the best way to create a space that people will feel comfortable in, and to start making a design that people will want to engage with. So it's hard to see the potential that could have been there that you recognize is probably just an issue of budget, that the outdoor spaces seem to be the first ones to feel the brunt.
Urban settings, you and I have traveled quite a bit to bigger cities, and we also find these wonderful gardens on the inside of buildings. Are you guys in that, or is that more of the interior design?
No, it's a whole different field of kind of that in setting up the conditions for an interior plantscape to survive. I love the idea of everyone having some just connection to greenery, and there's so much that goes into just our own health and having the view of something green, whether it's workplace or even in healthcare settings. But I would call in a local expert, and I would bring in a consultant, because just thinking about interior spaces and humidity and letting that soil, I just probably, that's not what my lane is.
That's good. All right. Well, that's good to know. I won't make that mistake again there. So I was talking about mistakes. What are some mistakes that you think you've made in projects in the past? And what was the outcome or resolution to figure that out on a major project? You've been doing this a while. I'm not going to try to age you, but we've all made mistakes along the way. What's one that stands out for you that you recall?
It's hard to recall a specific mistake because I think whenever we're going through a design process, even if there's something that's not right in the sense of, oh, a construction detail, or, oh, well, now this is not the right situation for what we have ended up with in changes to the design, then it's always a fluid process. So we're able to keep working on it, keep iterating, and eventually getting to that place where I don't want to say we don't have any mistakes. There are always going to be something that we need to go back and fix. But I don't think anything that's ever kind of made it into a project that it's like, oh, whoops.
Have you looked back on projects that you've done and realized maybe we should have tweaked it here or tweaked it there?
Oh, yeah. There's always walking around and, oh, what? I just imagined this a little bit differently. If we had done this, maybe that would have just made some improvement in some way, or in seeing how something was translated by the contractor, then we can go back and say, oh, what? I think maybe this time a better way to communicate in our details or specs, maybe this way. So I think, and that's one thing that really, I find the field is so rewarding to me, but I think that's one thing is because you're constantly being challenged. Every site is new. Right. Every solution is different. You're needing to be creative, but then also kind of stand on what your technical knowledge is to just get things built. But it's always changing. Like you never stop learning. You're always kind of growing. You're always learning new things. You're always being surprised by new things too.
Well, it's a good segue into one of the questions I had, which is what have you learned like that? What's so different now when you first started that either with the design or the plant selections or in those kind of things that since you first began and up to now, what's different?
Well, gosh, just within the last month or two, DA has changed the plant hardiness zone map.
Oh, really?
And that is a direct correlation with just what is changing in the environment, in the world.
Due to climate change, they've adjusted the hardiness.
They have, yeah. Right. And I believe it's only going to continue to be adjusted. And we have been having these conversations. We know that it is what has been happening, but them physically changing the map is really just acknowledgement of the conditions that we have been seeing.
And we've seen warmer weather here in the Triangle area for many years coming. So it's an adjustment that we have to make.
Yeah.
All of our garden is that we have or don't have. So do you have a green thumb then? Maybe I should ask that question.
I wish I had a little more land because I really love to tinker. I love being out in the garden and kind of working with my hands. And I probably have this little botanical hodgepodge because I just want to play with things and see how they do. And just kind of monitor and layer in all these different experimental species, but I do like to garden. I will say one of the other just challenges that is different from when I came out of school is just building resiliency. And I'm not going to say sustainability because sustainability I think it just doesn't capture too much or enough. But I feel like landscape architects, we are going to be those professionals that will be part of the ones at the center of figuring out how to build resiliency with the climate change issues that we're facing. Because we do work at that kind of higher level, how do we connect all of these different systems together? And that's just a whole different...
You mean about resiliency in the plant duration or how they're surviving or overall green space?
I think even just designing of communities or going into... needing to think of all the work being done like in Lumberton or the work being done at NC State's their coastal design studio. They are just working with communities to be able to understand how those communities can hopefully still exist where they are.
Yeah.
But what are the kind of key design moves that need to happen so that they can remain and they can still thrive and they can still move into the future.
I think that was a fascinating piece when I was researching about landscape architecture and looking on the website. I noticed that they included not just plan, design, parks, gardens, resorts, commercial, residential development, but also you help a lot in the restoration of natural places. So like wetlands and streams and mined areas that have been mined or areas that have been forested. So that's kind of what you're describing there with what's going on down east, right?
Yeah, there are so many different facets of what a landscape architect might or might not do. It's probably worth noting that landscape architecture was just designated a STEM discipline last year. And so that's the first recognition that this is a field that requires a higher level of education in science and math, technology, engineering.
Interesting.
Because yes, we are engineers with that kind of component of the natural ecosystem that we need to marry it to. So we are designing pavements and walls and the circulation and grading and drainage. And then we're coming in and kind of have that last layer of what is the planting. But all of that kind of works together in this kind of larger system.
Let's go. I'm going to transition a little bit to when you were a professor at University of Rhode Island, which I found fascinating when we met. What's a class that you would like to take over or reteach there, you think?
I loved, and I did not have an opportunity to teach it. One of my favorite classes that I took there was just the history of landscape architecture. And that was just the most fascinating. It went back starting at just the dawn of man and starting with these agricultural gardens and what were the first imprints of man on the land. And then went through kind of Roman times and spoke about all of the different kind of historic heritage gardens. And it just, I love that layer of history and also culminating with just thinking about travel and just seeing other places in the world and other cultures and how much just outdoor spaces and even garden design have influenced cultures over across history and across time, and being able to see some of those just fundamental principles that kind of played out in some of those original garden spaces.
Well, that's a great answer. I think it made me think about who would you go back and have coffee with if you had an opportunity?
Yeah, that's hard.
Who's some of your favorite folks that you think about?
I think it would have to be one of the pioneering women in landscape architecture, which I actually was really fortunate to work at a couple different places, starting with my internship and then going to Carol Johnson Associates, places that were founded by these pioneering women that started their practice back in like the 50s when women just didn't do that. And they became leaders in their field. So one of my favorite, I'll say gardens, kind of formal gardens in the U.S. is Dumbarton Oaks. It's in Georgetown, so it's like just within Washington, D.C. You may not even imagine that it's there when you're there, that you're surrounded by the nation's capital. But it's this gorgeous Italian Renaissance garden. But what I appreciate is it was designed by a woman back in the late 19th century. And she had she was working on all these different sites she worked at the White House and then creating Dumbarton. She just did something that spoke to her being able to do that as a woman in the time that she was living in, spoke to her talent and her knowledge and kind of creating her own practice out of nothing. And so she was the sole woman that was one of the founders of ASLA, American Society for Landscape Architects. So right. I would love to go have a little conversation with her.
That's neat. I've lived there a long time in my past, and I didn't realize there's little gardens everywhere around the city, but I'll have to look that up next time I'm there for sure.
Yeah,
kind
absolutely.
Cool to go to.
I'll give you a tour.
That's probably a good idea. You come. We talked a little bit before the podcast about you attending the Urban Land Institute, Carolina's chapter meeting, annual meeting last week. Did you pick up any nuggets along the way there, or do you have anything that you can share?
Yeah, it was interesting. Our keynote speaker spoke a lot about just the market in general. I think it had some very positive things to say. They do see the improvement, and they do think that even if a recession does come, it's going to be kind of fleeting. It's not going to be as deep a recession as some may be concerned about. I think what I was most interested in, and this is coming from, so I'm not in the financial world, but just, I think what is causing them concern is the outlook on just U.S.'s debt and our ability to repay that debt, and that other countries who typically are the ones who are buying our debt are not buying our debt anymore. And so what is that really going to mean in the long term? So that was the kind of a more profound wanting to understand what is that going to mean into the future, because it all kind of trickles down to our fields and just development in general.
Yeah, I always think about, when I think about architecture and the different organizations, I always kind of lump ULI as a kind of the umbrella for all those, because it does kind of carry all that with that urban and with the design thing. All right, it's a little bit personal question. You and I actually chatted about this, but let's say if you had to write a book tomorrow, what do you think you would write about?
I have so many different thoughts on that, because I think even in my work, I'm most connected with the kinds of projects that feel familiar to me. So they just make more connections. So that would be things like military heritage, being an army brat, being able to work on projects that have that military heritage component. I also am a total aviation and space geek. So maybe combining those in some way. I love drama, historical drama. So I don't know if I would love to go back and kind of look at different eras or different engagements that kind of bring all those things together and kind of write about those. Or my own experiences, because just as an army brat growing up, I think it's a different kind of resiliency that's built in growing up in those conditions. Yeah. And being not only for the challenges, because when you're moving every year as a kid, it's just, that's tough as a kid. Only now I can look back and say, how amazing to have been exposed to all these different places and people and cultures. Yeah. So I could see that that might be my book.
Okay, I totally thought you and I share a passion for Star Wars, so I thought you're going to totally write a new Star Wars movie.
I just can't touch that, because I want to see what, I can't see coming up with that on my own. I just want to see what they create.
Yeah, I think you and I both, right? All right, let's end with Ratio's working on a lot of exciting things, I know. So what's something you can share with us that's kind of breaking news, or you guys have picked up a cool project that you want to kind of help us out understanding?
Oh, well, right now we're working in Raleigh. We're working on the Raleigh Convention Center. And so part of that is relocating Red Hat Amphitheater and then bringing in kind of the next future to the Convention Center. So that's a really exciting project, just because it is such a prominent place in downtown Raleigh, which is going through so much change right now and is really the gateway to the city. Thinking about the spaces that do become that introduction to the city for outsiders, it's really exciting to think about being a part of that. Another one is I'm working on a new headquarters for Andretti Global, which is from the racing legacy of Mario Andretti. And so it's his family members kind of continuing that legacy. And it's their workplace headquarters, but they build cars now. And they are on the forefront of kind of developing that new technology and kind of staying in the forefront. So for me on the site side, it's I love kind of being able to tell stories, whether it's military heritage or aviation or something. But for this one, trying to tell the story of what their industry is in racing. And so the site is being designed with this thought of, what does this movement, what are the physics of racing kind of look like? And is there a way to represent that somewhat abstractly in how the site is laid out, what the features look like? Could it look like something that is like aerodynamics, that you have this nod of what's going on inside without being completely literal about that? But that's, I get really excited about that.
That's
ability
cool.
to kind of storytell.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think that's when you look at landscape architecture, there's something behind some of, why did they do it this way? Why did they tell that story? Why did they pick those certain plants? That's kind of what I'm seeing now that I've been educated a little more. So I appreciate that. So last question, and this is a big one for me. So when's the best time for me to put down spring fertilizer on my yard? I don't know if you know or not.
Again, I'd probably call a landscape contractor and see what they have to say. Or I'd keep a watch out and see when the commercial guys are putting it down and just follow suit.
It's probably what I'll end up doing.
I would trust them a little bit more.
Watch those guys. Exactly right. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today. It's interesting when we do commercial real estate, we have so many different industries that we touch. And I think having a little bit of knowledge and know when the right time to bring in the experts is important for all of us. So thank you for sharing your stories today and helping us all learn a little bit more.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Commercial Real Estate Matters. We hope you've enjoyed learning about the latest trends and news in the industry. As always, we welcome your feedback and suggestions. Please consider following us on social media or subscribing to this podcast to stay up to date on all the latest news. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you.